We're breaking down the latest news out of the state capitol here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last week, we saw Republican state lawmakers send their first bill to the desk of Governor Tony Evers, and they voted along party lines to pass an income tax cut that the governor has all but promised to veto. We'll explore the sticking points here in the state capitol report. We'll also look at what might be in the governor's budget, and later we'll ask about the fallout over Colin Kaepernick and the Black History Month commemoration. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle want to see an income tax cut, but they don't see eye to eye on how to pay for it. What do you think? Do you like one side's plan more than the other? What would a tax cut like this mean for you? Let us know at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Laurel White is the Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter and a co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
So let's look at this income tax cut. While Republicans say they're helping meet a campaign promise, it looks like it's doubtful the governor will sign it. What's going on?
So the main problem here with the governor signing it is that he has his own tax proposal, and it's fairly substantially different from the one that Republicans passed last week. The biggest difference between the two plans is how they're paid for, but that's a pretty big sticking point because the ways that they're paid for represent real fundamental differences between Democrats and Republicans in the state capitol. The governor says that he wants to pay for his tax cut by rolling back this tax credit for manufacturers in Wisconsin. And this is a tax credit that was created under former Governor Scott Walker. It's something that Republicans really believe in as a way to spur the economy, to help support job creators. And they view the governor's rolling back of this tax credit as essentially a tax increase on these job creators. And they say there's no way that we're going to back any form of a tax increase. Now, after this Republican plan passed the state legislature last week, Governor Evers put out a statement and said, quote, "I made a promise to the people of our state that I would cut taxes by 10% for the middle class and that I'd do it in part by rolling back handouts to millionaires and giving that money back to Wisconsin families." So you can see that there's a very fundamental disagreement here on this tax cut, and that's why we're kind of doubtful the governor's going to sign this.
Right. So it looks like the rollback for manufacturers, that's a non-starter for Republicans. And Governor Evers has his own way of funding this. What is Governor Evers' approach to, or I'm sorry, what is the Republican approach to funding this tax cut?
So the Republican approach is using state money that's already in existence. So they're not raising any new revenues. They're not doing anything. They're just pulling from this pot of money that actually rolled over from the last state budget. So they say that, you know, they're not raising taxes to implement their plan, that they're using this existing state money. Now, Democrats, including the governor, have a problem with using that existing pot of state money because it's a one-time rollover from the previous budget. And they say, how are we going to continue to fund this tax cut years and years into the future when we don't know if we're going to have this same size of a pot of money that's unused for every budget cycle? So they're calling that very irresponsible. They're calling it, just not looking ahead, just not planning ahead in a way that's necessary for state government. Now, the Republican comeback to that is there are lots of things that we fund in a current budget that we don't know how we're going to pay for in later budgets. We figure everything out year to year, or every 2 years to every 2 years in Wisconsin.
So what has the governor or other lawmakers said about any room for compromise?
So there has been a little bit of discussion about finding another revenue source for one of these. I mean, obviously, the two revenue sources that are being discussed by each side are sort of non-starters for the other. So you'd have to come up with sort of an option C that hasn't been talked about before. Now, I know that some of the leaders in the legislature and the governor have said, we're looking for compromise. We're trying to find bipartisan compromise in the state legislature these days. We really believe we need to do that if we're going to get things done. But I personally haven't heard of any sort of concrete examples of that option C at this point. Now, maybe that'll happen during the upcoming state budget negotiations.
We're talking with WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White about the activities of the legislature during this edition of the State Capitol Report. And we want to hear from you. What do you want to see come out of Governor Evers' forthcoming budget at the end of the month? What does your community need from this budget? Share your hopes, your needs at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Laurel, Governor Evers' budget address is set for February 28th. And in the lead up to it, we're hearing more and more about what we may see from the Evers administration, little hints here and there. One signal came in last week on what we might see on transportation. Is there a chance for a gas tax hike?
There is, and that's something that we've definitely had our eye on throughout the gubernatorial campaign. That's something that Governor Evers said should be considered an option as we look at ways to fund our roads. He said all options should be on the table. It's actually something that he took a little bit of heat for during the gubernatorial campaign. Now there's a task force that the governor has assembled to talk about transportation and possible ways to increase road funding in Wisconsin. The head of that task force last week signaled that a gas tax is certainly something that they've talked about. The governor affirmed that. So we don't have any concrete numbers as of right now. I think that's something, obviously, that we'll get at the very latest in the governor's budget proposal. But we definitely think part of that is going to be a gas tax increase.
What do we know about what Republican lawmakers, Republican leaders want to see when it comes to funding roads?
We know that Assembly Republicans are potentially on board with a gas tax increase. They were on board with that during the last budget. But Governor Walker kind of put the brakes on that. He wanted a corresponding tax cut if they were going to raise the gas tax. There was a little bit of opposition in the state Senate that wasn't there in the assembly. So that broke down a little bit in terms of the gas tax last time around. Now, Republican leaders now, during this session, are reaffirming a commitment to tolling. And they say that they're open to creating tolling across Wisconsin to help pay for road projects. Now, that's something that Governor Evers has said he probably won't be including in this budget. That's something that would take a couple years to implement, a few years for revenues to start coming in. And he says we need to work on more immediate solutions to the road funding problem.
Well, let's turn to education here for a moment. Governor Evers said he will fully fund a tuition freeze for University of Wisconsin students. And historically, what did we see from former Governor Scott Walker's administration on this issue?
So Governor Walker first froze tuition for in-state undergraduate students at the UW system in 2013. And they've continued that freeze in every budget since 2013. The difference between what Governor Evers says he's going to do and what Governor Walker did in each of those budgets and the legislature is that Governor Evers says he's going to, quote unquote, fund the freeze, which is something that we heard a lot about during budget negotiations under Governor Walker. What fund the freeze means is essentially increasing state investments in the UW system, state resources being funneled toward the UW system to make up for the not declining amount of tuition enrollment, but that flat rate as expenses go up, of course, as we know they
inflation
do. Inflation, exactly, et
right.
cetera. So Governor Evers says he's going to put more state money in to compensate for that tuition freeze continuing.
Talking with WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White. She stays with us as we continue the State Capitol Report. Next, we'll look at the conflict over a measure from the legislature's Black Caucus to commemorate February's Black History Month. Have you been following the back and forth on this? What do you think? Should Colin Kaepernick have been included or not? We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last week on a party line vote, Republicans removed from its Black History Month resolution the name of the quarterback, Colin Kaepernick, a native of Milwaukee. And remember, back in 2016, he sparked a national debate when he started taking a knee during the national anthem as a protest to the excessive use of force by police, namely against people of color. The lawmaker said he was just too controversial. Where do you come down on this? Did your elected official represent your opinions on this? We're at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Laurel White stays with us. She is WPR State Capitol reporter and a co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. So, Laurel, let's step back here. Wisconsin lawmakers, they clashed. We saw the clash over this resolution commemorating February's Black History Month. So who drafted the legislation in the first place?
Mm-hmm. So this was a resolution that was drafted by the Legislative Black Caucus, which is a group of African-American lawmakers in the state legislature. And they said it was aimed at honoring individuals of African descent and African-Americans who have accomplished big things on a state or national level, things that have helped advance Wisconsinites of African descent.
What was the goal, and this type of legislation has come in the past? There's a history of this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. We see resolutions all the time in the state capitol. They're not like regular bills. They don't necessarily do something concrete. They're more about honoring an individual or a community or a holiday. Actually, on the same day that this Black History Month resolution was up was a resolution about Heart Month, I think. So sort of things like that. Generally, we don't see debate about these resolutions. They pass on unanimous votes and sort of move along. But that certainly wasn't the case with this one, as you know.
Well, let's take a call now. Let's go to Vincent in Platteville with thoughts. Vincent, hi.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Very interesting subject. I believe that Colin Kaepernick has something to say, and I believe that he tried to do the right thing. And this current situation is unfortunate because he has shown himself to take what should have been a rather benign, not benign subject, but a way to go about raising awareness to the country, and he radicalized it. And I'm afraid that that has tarnished his reputation, and I find him untrustworthy, and I think that's what we're seeing now with this current situation, that he's a type of person that would want to radicalize the situation rather than work at it reasonably.
Laurel, is this the worry that Republicans had when objecting to him being part of this resolution?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair characterization. A lot of folks talked about how they believed him to be a very polarizing figure. And Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, for example, who leads Republicans in the state assembly, said that he thought it was unfortunate that members of the Legislative Black Caucus chose a figure that was so polarizing to include in the resolution. He really thought that they should focus on including people that everyone could agree on and people that don't sort of divide folks into their separate camps for something like this that's meant to honor accomplishments and recognize a community.
How did the Assembly deal with this versus how the Senate dealt with this resolution?
So the Assembly had a little bit of back and forth, some sort of procedural gymnastics with this resolution. What happened was Assembly Republicans came up with their own Black History Month resolution that didn't include Colin Kaepernick, and they attempted to bring that up for a vote instead of the one drafted by the Legislative Black Caucus. Democrats would not vote in favor of bringing that resolution up. They wanted to vote on the other one. So there was a little bit of an impasse there. They moved on to debate about the tax cut that we were talking about earlier, kind of put this on the back burner, and then came back at the tail end of the session day with a compromise that had been struck between Republican leaders and Democrats for a resolution that was considered to be kind of drafted jointly but didn't include Colin Kaepernick. That resolution passed on a unanimous vote, but that unanimous vote didn't last for very long because a number of Democratic lawmakers, I believe every Democratic lawmaker in the Assembly, chose between the evening after that bill was passed and into the next morning to go ahead and change their vote from a yes to a no, saying that that compromise really shouldn't have been struck, that Republican leaders shouldn't have had quite so much power and input in who the Legislative Black Caucus wanted to honor in this resolution. So there was a lot of high profile back and forth there. There was some national coverage of that debate, and that kind of set the stage for the state Senate debate the next day, where we saw that disagreement and a refusal to draft sort of a compromise resolution from the very beginning. And essentially, there was a party line vote with Democrats voting against and Republicans voting in favor of that resolution that doesn't include Kaepernick. So it did pass, but not with any Democratic support.
Let's go to Steve now in Sun Prairie with thoughts on this. Steve, good morning.
Morning. Yeah, it just screams of the Democrats trying to play identity politics. I mean, Colin Kaepernick probably would have gotten more votes as an act of condemning him and his behavior, actually more his behavior than him. And the fact that the Democrats would use this as an issue is just another way of them using identity politics to divide.
So what about identity politics here, and where do we go from here on this resolution? What's next?
So what's interesting about these resolutions is that they're not like other bills that have to be signed by the governor. So essentially, this is the end of the road for this particular resolution, unless lawmakers decide to bring it up again in a different form. I would venture to say we're going to have a similar debate potentially next February. So I don't think this is a debate that's going to go anywhere anytime soon, but there aren't any sort of practical steps or practical things that need to happen with this particular resolution looking forward.
Very quickly, let's look at the Supreme Court race. You've been covering the lead up to the April 2nd Supreme Court race for Justice Shirley Abrahamson's seat, and the candidates are Appeals Court Judge Brian Hagedorn and Chief Appeals Court Judge Lisa Neubauer. Both sit on the Waukesha-based District 2 Court of Appeals, and there's been some concerns from liberal advocacy groups regarding Hagedorn about a school to be helped he helped found and is a board member for. Mm-hmm. So what is happening there?
So this is the Augustine Academy, which is located in the Milwaukee suburbs. I believe it's Delafield. And Hagedorn, as you said, has been a part of the founding of this school and sits on the board of directors. The reason this has become a bit controversial is it's a Christian school, and they have a code of conduct that bars teachers, parents, and students from participating in same-sex relationships. Their charter, which states their values, also has some language that's strongly against transgender individuals. And so these liberal advocacy groups are saying that a judge shouldn't be so associated with a group that has these strong social stances. They said because of that, Judge Hagedorn can't be trusted to be unbiased on the bench.
How has Hagedorn responded to these concerns?
So he essentially says that he can separate his personal beliefs and his values and his religious beliefs from his legal work, that he should be ruling on what the law is, not what he believes the law should be. And this is something that's come up frequently in judicial races in Wisconsin, sort of the personal ideology of individuals running for the bench and how they might or might not be able to separate that from their rulings.
Well, April 2nd will be here, you know, before we know it. What are you watching next when it comes to this race?
So we're just keeping a close eye on it. Obviously, fundraising, that's a way to look at how much public support these individuals are getting. We'll keep an eye on that and getting more from each of these candidates in terms of what their judicial philosophy is. And looking forward, this is obviously a very important thing. The makeup of the state Supreme Court is something that a lot of folks have their eye on, just as people looked at the makeup of the U.S. Supreme Court during the presidential race. So this is a very important election, and one that I'm sure we're going to be talking about even as budget negotiations begin in the Capitol, which certainly takes a lot of our time and energy as well.
Well, and quickly here, as we look at a budget presented by Governor Evers at the end of the month, what are you going to be watching for as the weeks here tick down to February 28th?
Governor Evers is rolling out more of his state budget than Governor Walker did in the past. We're getting more bits and pieces here and there. As we heard a little bit earlier in the newscast, he's talking about marijuana legalization today. That's going to be part of the state budget. He's been rolling out initiatives that have to do with rural dental care and clean drinking water across Wisconsin. So I think we're keeping a really close eye on what his next proposal is going to be that he floats for the state budget. And really, as this sort of slow rollout happens, we're able to take a more in-depth look at the pieces as they start to come together. So we're looking forward to doing that.
Well, Laurel, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's state capitol reporter, and she is co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Up next, it is news, and we're talking two sides of the so-called dark store loophole, one against it and one that says the loophole isn't even a loophole. It's dark store theory and your thoughts on it at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us for the State Capitol Report here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about dark store theory on this edition of the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So tax assessors evaluate the value of property based on what a buyer may pay for the property, what similar properties are going for, and the income the property may generate. And a survey last summer by the nonpartisan research organization Wisconsin Policy Forum found appeals by large retailers to lower their tax assessments may be on the uptick in Wisconsin. Getting your thoughts on dark store theory at 800-642-1234. Do you live in a community that's been impacted by the so-called dark store loophole? Are you concerned it will raise your property taxes? Do you want Governor Tony Evers to address the issue in the budget? How do you want to see him do that? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Jerry DeShane is Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. Jerry, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's take a step back here. Historically, how has dark store theory been applied here in Wisconsin and more broadly across the country?
Well, historically, it hasn't. That's kind of the challenge. This is a relatively new tax strategy, let's call it, that tax attorneys have cooked up in other states. Michigan saw $100 million in local tax revenue went away because they make this argument. And the argument really boils down to the notion that my building is obsolete the day I built it. So there's a Lowe's store in Wauwatosa, as an example, cost $16 million to build. The owners of that store say it's only worth $7 million. And that's a huge shift. And in Wisconsin, what it means is that tax burden gets shifted to somebody else, primarily homeowners.
So that there is this immediate depreciation, but looking at your neighbors who perhaps have gone out of business and saying, you know, base your assessment on a dark store next door to me, perhaps in the strip mall.
Well, and typically what they'll do is they won't go next door.
Okay.
Because frankly, that's the same hot neighborhood, right? Real estate value is all about location. What the Lowe's store in Wauwatosa is arguing, and this is typical for a Lowe's dark store argument, is they pick a vacant store that's in a neighborhood that's either in decline or where, for whatever reason, retail is just no longer hot. And the value of that particular property is considerably less.
So what about your side, the side that, lay out your focus of this loophole debate for us, because the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce don't even consider this as a loophole.
No, they nothing to see here, I think, is the argument. From our perspective, first of all, this is new. This is not something Wisconsin tax law has contemplated, and that's why it's a loophole. There's nothing in the law that says, whoa, wait a minute. This is a brand new building. This is in a thriving area. You've got to temper your expectations. And frankly, I should say this. Assessing some of these big commercial properties is hard. It's complicated. And writing tax laws is an always evolving process to keep up with the tax attorneys. And that's what we're trying to do here, is they've come up with a cute new angle for reducing the value of their buildings. And now the law needs to catch up with that and say, whoa, wait a minute, you can't do that.
And WMC has said that the narrative of dark store loopholes starts with a handful of tax assessors and local officials coming up with a way to increase the property taxes businesses are paying. How do you see it? Where does this begin?
Yeah, the rogue assessor argument. I think about assessors and, you know, these guys with the pocket protectors and everything, and them going rogue strikes me as a little odd. The bottom line is this is happening in virtually every community that has large format retail, for lack of a better word. And this has occurred in, as I said, it was a huge problem in Michigan. Indiana dealt with this. Minnesota is dealing with it right now. North Dakota is dealing with it. It is happening all over the place. This is not an assessor here who's getting his numbers wrong. This is a purposeful tax strategy.
How are other states dealing with this loophole?
Well, in Michigan, there was legislation to close the loophole. In Indiana, they actually passed legislation to close the loophole. In Michigan, the legislation didn't pass, but then the courts turned around and said no. They shut the dark store loophole by a court decision. That, by the way, could happen in Wisconsin. There are cases currently in court, but it hasn't happened yet. There's a related loophole, Kate, and the danger with this stuff is you get so lost in the weeds.
In tax policy.
Yeah, that you lose the essential fairness of it all. But there is another one that affects leased property. That was based on a Walgreens versus City of Madison court case that affects leased property. Well, that was a Wisconsin Supreme Court case. So without legislative change, and the governor's proposing to fix that one, but without legislative action, that's the law of the land.
Well, Governor Tony Evers has said he wants to close the dark store loophole in his proposed budget at the end of the month. How do you hope to see him do this?
Well, the language is fairly, it's established. There was legislation introduced last year by, I should point out, the most diverse group of co-sponsors any bill in the legislature has ever seen. It was introduced by some of the most conservative Republican legislators, had over 80 legislative co-sponsors, which, in case you're counting, that's a majority of the legislature. So the governor, we understand, will be using substantially similar language to that. So the language is there. All he's got to do is fit it into his budget bill, and then the battle begins again.
We're talking with Jerry DeShane. He is executive director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. We're talking about how major retailers like Walmart have filed thousands of property tax appeals based on dark store theory around the U.S. That's a tax strategy used by big box stores like Target, like Walmart and Menards to lower their property tax value. You can join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. Where do you come down on dark store theory? Do you think last year's referendum question that asked if voters thought legislators should close the so-called dark store loophole, was it slanted? Was it unfair? And how do you want Governor Tony Evers to act on this? Call in at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Jerry, Wisconsin or WMC has written over the last decade, the state property tax burden has shifted from homeowners onto businesses. And so that the so-called loophole is an effort to squeeze more out of businesses and shift burden here. How would you respond to that?
Again, if you look over real history, if you go back to 1970, at that time, manufacturing commercial property was paying half the property taxes in the state, which is basically the ratio in Minnesota. Residential apartments and homes paid the rest. Well, today in Minnesota, it's still a 50-50 proposition, but in Wisconsin, homeowners are paying nearly 70%. The commercial share, which is somewhere around 20%, has gone up a couple of points in the last few years, primarily because after the Great Recession, residential building slowed down dramatically. So that's really kind of shuffling at the margins. The other thing that my friends over at WMC won't say is that with the same breath, they will then say, but commercial's paying too much. We need it to come down. So commercial continues to pay a lesser and lesser share of the pie. And in most communities, especially small communities, they're the biggest user of municipal services.
So help us out with how communities are hurting as a result of this loophole. Do we have any particular impact that you can cite?
The most dramatic, if you will, is the village of Manawa. That's up in the Fox Valley. They had one property. In that case, it was a manufacturer. And I should say dark store is a bit of a misnomer. The theory can be used for manufacturing property, can be used for a lot of property. Well, that food processing facility got its assessment cut in half. As a result, everyone else in town paid 12.5% more. The average residential property tax increase in Manawa, because that one property got a tax break, everybody else paid on average $300 more. The impacts are going to be different. Here in Madison, the impact will be much smaller because there's so much more property. It's diluted, if you will. What happens when you get a tax break on your dark store, Kate, the tax revenue doesn't go away. It gets shifted to your neighbors, other businesses, and again, primarily to homeowners. One of the other negative impacts on cities, Standard & Poor's, you've probably heard that name. It's a national bond rating agency. They rate the creditworthiness of governments. They have warned that the dark store loophole could be devastating, particularly for small communities, that bond raters just may not trust their tax levy if they have unresolved dark store issues out there. So the bottom line impact is this could be very serious, particularly for small communities. And in Wisconsin, that's the majority of them.
As we start to wrap up here, we're seeing lots of big box stores closing down in communities, large and small, straight across the state. And this will impact tax revenue. Is there a lot at stake here on multiple fronts as communities figure out how to raise the revenue and find the stability they need?
Well, ironically, for big box retailers, one of the negative impacts, if we can't fix this problem, is cities and villages will take a second, third, and perhaps fourth look at whether or not their zoning should encourage that sort of development. I mean, there's a lot of thought out there that that's not necessarily in a community's best interest. One thing I do need to point out, though, Kate, there was a national study by Deloitte. It's one of these big national conservative business firms that showed that big box retail is generally doing well, particularly lumber yards are doing well, discount retailers are doing well. For every closing, there are two new stores opening.
Jerry, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Jerry DeShane is Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. As we continue this conversation about dark store loophole and dark store theory, you can join in at 800-642-1234. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Big box stores using strategies to avoid paying higher taxes under current law. We're exploring the so-called dark store loophole on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Large retailers argue their property tax assessments should include the values of similar vacant or dark stores, but local government advocates say that reasoning doesn't make sense. Where do you come down? Your thoughts welcome at 800-642-1234. Corey Fish is Director of Tax, Transportation, and Legal Affairs at Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. That's the trade group representing retailers. Corey, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me.
So we've been calling this a loophole. Do you see it as a loophole?
No, absolutely not. any business in the state of Wisconsin, whether you're a manufacturer or a big box retailer or whether you are a residential homeowner, you all use the same exact process to first assess, and then if you feel that your tax assessment is unfair, to challenge your tax assessments in Wisconsin. So there's simply no loophole. Big box retailers are using the same exact process as any other taxpayer in the state.
Governor Evers says he wants to address this in his upcoming budget. Would your trade group take steps to fight that, or is it already doing that?
Yes. So Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce believes that property tax assessment in the state of Wisconsin should be quick and fair. And so if Governor Evers or any legislator or any other elected official in the state were to push legislation that would change Wisconsin's property tax assessment system to make us a national outlier and make our taxation system more complex and make it take longer to get through property tax disputes, we would oppose that.
Well, let's take a call now. Let's go to Matt joining us from Milwaukee. Matt, hi.
Good morning. I would first like to bring attention to there's a really incredible website. And I believe the woman is with the University of Minnesota. I forget her name at the moment, but the website is called the Big Box Toolkit. If anyone wants to Google that, it'll come up. And basically, there is a lot of research done on these companies, particularly big box retail stores, where these buildings are often built for, you know, with never intending to make a profit, and they're planned to be abandoned. And their previous guest brought up Lowe's in the Milwaukee area. They built three of them, and within 4 years, two of them were abandoned and sat for, you know, many, many years vacant. And, you know, those buildings cost, you know, $10 to $15 million to build, and you know.
So Matt, you're just saying this is part of a larger tax strategy that businesses readily partake in?
Not just tax strategy. I would suggest that, like, these Lowe's were built. They put deed restrictions on the properties so that, like, Home Depot can never put a home supply store on that site. So they'll like buy these properties just to keep the competition out, even if, you know, it's not in their Lowe's is not really strong in Milwaukee. You know, they just didn't want, you know, Home Depot to, you know, it's like a competitive tactic. And then the neighborhood sits with, you know, vacant buildings for a decade or more.
Let's get Corey to respond here. Corey, go ahead.
Yeah, of course. So there's a lot to unpack there, but I think there's a few key things. One, I think Matt's right that often it costs more for many people or anyone to build a structure than what it would sell for, especially when you're building a business whose primary purpose of it is not to then sell that building to make a profit. The primary purpose is to sell merchandise or a service within the building to make your money. So I guess I'd compare it to a home. Oftentimes we make improvements to our homes that we'll never find or never get back the monetary value it took to build the improvement when we sell it, because part of the reason we're building that improvement is for our own enjoyment, right? So we're getting value from there. Similar with the business, they build a, you know, they will build a retail store that fits that business's needs, and they will never receive the market value that it took back from selling that, that it took to buy the build it.
Well, let's take a look at the shifting burden here. The League of Wisconsin Municipalities is saying that the share of the property tax levy paid by residential property owners has grown dramatically over time, and that shifting more of this burden onto Wisconsin homeowners would be unfair. So how do you respond to that?
Yeah, of course. So I guess we'll say that over the last 10 years, there has not been a shift. Well, there has been a shift, but it has been two businesses from homeowners by about 2.5%. But longer, the league is pointing at a longer shift over the last half a century or so. But the key detail they leave out when they point out that shift is that both the voters of Wisconsin and the state legislature took steps to create that shift on purpose. So what they did was pass the in-value agricultural use law. So in order to protect Wisconsin's agricultural industry, the state legislature, and again, it's constitutional amendments, the voters have to vote on it, determined that they would tax the agricultural land at its in-use value. So if you were a cornfield, they would tax you as a cornfield, even though your highest and best use may be a subdivision.
Oh, so you kind of see this as a tit-for-tat?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
I apologize. So what I'm saying is that the entire shift that the league is talking about is the direct reaction to this law. So in 1970, the agriculture's tax burden, proportion of the property tax they paid in the state of Wisconsin was about 17%. Today, it's less than 1%. So this law is the complete reason for that shift. It has nothing to do with, you know, retail stores using a loophole or anything like that.
Let's bring in Joan now from Eau Claire with thoughts on this. Joan, hi.
Good morning. When these large retailers come into a community, they're provided with streets, they're provided with highways. This isn't for free. Everyone needs to pay their fair share. We as residents pay our fair share. These businesses are bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars each year. They need to pay their fair share. That's my comment, and thank you for allowing me to speak.
Joan, thanks for the call. And Corey, what is your reaction there as, you know, infrastructure is built around these big box retailers?
Yeah, of course. So businesses in the state of Wisconsin pay 48% of local taxes and fees. There's simply no evidence to suggest they're not paying their fair share. They pay almost half of the tax burden in Eau Claire and in other cities in the state. And there's no evidence to suggest that they use 48% of services in those communities. So I think I empathize and understand where that individual is coming from, but I think there's no data to support that point of view.
So if legislation were to pass closing this so-called dark store loophole, what would that mean for businesses in the state from your perspective?
Yeah, I think you'd create more dark stores. So you saw Federal Reserve called 2017 the retail apocalypse. We lost 67,000 retail jobs and 7,000 stores closed, and that trend has not gotten any better since then. So I think in a low-margin business where retail is already facing online competition, if you were to increase their taxes, you'll just simply see more stores closing.
Yeah, and so during this time of big box stores closing, do you see the retailers who are staying alive and open aggressively seeking out these lower tax assessments as their neighbor anchor stores close?
No. Again, I don't think retail is shifted tax strategy. They're using the same exact tool that a homeowner can use. When you think of the dark stores loophole, I think of it like this. You have two homes that are identical in every respect right next to each other. One is vacant and one is occupied. If you're living in the occupied home and a tax assessor comes in and says that your tax assessment is, $250,000, but the identical vacant home next to you is only $200,000, that's absurd. You should be compared to the vacant home because your properties are worth the same value. You living in your home doesn't make it worth more money. And a business conducting business inside a building doesn't make that property worth more money. We tax buildings through the property tax. We tax real estate and the physical structure, not the business inside.
Corey, thank you for joining us. Corey Fish is Director of Tax, Transportation, and Legal Affairs at Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. We've been talking about the dark store loophole here on the Ideas Network.